Greenville Health System's vision is to transform healthcare for the benefit of the people and communities we serve. In order to better communicate, we proudly present this podcast series, Inside Health, brought to you by Greenville Health System. Here's Melanie Cole.
Asthma is one of the most common chronic diseases of children in the United States, and it remains one of the top reasons for inpatient hospitalization for children 0 to 18 years of age at the GHS Children's Hospital. Today to speak with us about asthma is Dr. Michael Fields and nurse practitioner Lisa Dubose from the Greenville Health System Pediatric Pulmonary Division. Welcome to you both. Dr. Fields, I'd like to start with you. So what is asthma and who is at risk? Is there a genetic component?
Asthma is a very common and complex disease. Really, anyone is at risk of developing difficulties with that. The three groups that we see are typically the young, very young infants and toddlers, the school-age children, and the adolescents. And the younger you are when you have difficulty, the more common it is that you outgrow it as you get older.
Dr. Fields, they do say that there is this link with eczema and things like that. Is that a myth or not?
No, it's true that asthma is an allergic type disorder, so there's a lot of overlap between asthma, allergies, and eczema. They call that the allergic triad, right, where patients, if you have one or two of those, you're very likely to have at least some degree of trouble with all three.
Lisa, I'm going to you here. Triggers. We hear about identifying those triggers and trying to find out what it is that's going to exacerbate an asthma symptom. So please speak about the triggers for us.
Triggers can be very individualized from patient to patient, but there are some general triggers, such as tobacco smoke, that tend to really irritate anyone who has any sort of pulmonary disease, and of course, asthma is a pulmonary disease. Other types of triggers would be pet dander, stress. You can be really excited and happy about something, and that can actually throw you into an asthma attack, or very distressed about something, crying, real upset, throwing a tantrum. We often hear that the little toddlers will then have an attack after getting very upset. And then allergic type of things, such as dust mites. And then there are some patients that will develop asthma as a result of exercise. And you've heard the term exercise-induced asthma.
So Dr. Fields, please explain for us a little bit about the diagnosis and what might a parent notice in their child that would say, oh, you know what, yikes, we need to bring this to a pulmonary specialist because maybe this child has asthma.
Absolutely. The things that people notice are obviously the easy ones are things like coughing or wheezing or having difficulty breathing, using extra muscles in the belly or the chest. You see the ribs popping in and out, the belly bouncing up and down. Those are more obvious signs. Some of the more subtle things that we see are some mild exercise symptoms, just not quite being able to keep up with the other children. This child is always the one who needs to take a break first while they're involved in an activity, have trouble keeping up in PE or recess. The kid who runs up and down the soccer field twice and then sits down to pick flowers. It might be that they just don't like soccer, but it also frequently is that they are having difficulty breathing, and so they're smart enough to say, okay, I'm not going to run around. I'm just going to take a break and catch my breath.
And what do you do to diagnose them?
A lot of what we do is based upon the history, the patterns, the triggers that we've seen. As Lisa had mentioned, the other triggers. Viruses are also a very common trigger. So people who have a particular difficulty with coughing and wheezing when they get sick and take a longer time to get better from their cold. So a lot of it is based on the history. But then also we do have several different kinds of lung function testing that we can do to measure how well the patient is able to get air in and out of their lungs. Obviously, most of those tests require you to be above about age 5. So for the younger set, it's really more based on the history and physical exam and things of that nature.
So Lisa, what happens when a parent brings a child in to see you? What is your team like, and how do you reassure the parents, and what do you do for them?
If it's an initial visit, that visit tends to be a little longer than a follow-up, obviously. So we always try to warn the families to plan to spend at least an hour, hour and a half with us so that you can get thoroughly assessed. We always would like them to bring copies of x-rays that have been done or have the primary care provider send them to us ahead of time so we can review those. Again, like what Dr. Fields said, history is imperative. So when the families come and they sit down, we're going to do a very thorough exam asking extensive massive amounts of questions about the birth history, about the family history, as we know that asthma can be a very familial disease. We are going to go forward in terms of what are the symptoms that they're seeing on a regular basis. What types of medications has the pediatrician or the family practice doctor tried with the child? Has the child had to go to the emergency room, or have they been hospitalized for their symptoms? And then once we've kind of achieved all the history and we've examined the child, then we work together with the parents, and depending on the age of the child, we come up with a plan with or without the child's benefit. Usually if the child's old enough, we want to include them on the plan as well, because it's a team approach to taking care of them. And then we figure out the best options to take care of them, with the explanation that at the first visit, it may take several more visits till we find the optimal medications to treat their disease.
I'd also like to add to what Lisa just said, the idea of how much education we spend, how much time we spend trying to provide education to the family, explaining to them what is asthma, what causes it, what do the medicines do, what are they watching for, because they are our eyes and ears when they get home to let us know if things are going well or not going well.
So, Dr. Fields, what is the first-line therapy you would try with a child based on their history and the symptoms that they've had? What would you do for them first?
Well, the medications are broken down into two basic categories. The first category is rescue medications, things like inhaled albuterol, and then there's medications that we refer to as controllers, whose job is to be taken routinely on a daily basis to reduce the inflammation that's in the airways in asthma and therefore prevent the exacerbations, the symptoms, the problems that the family sees. So depending on the severity of the disease, we identify whether it's best to just use a rescue medicine as needed, or more likely, and most of the time, we want to start a daily therapy like an inhaled steroid to reduce the inflammation in the airways and prevent the symptoms from being present.
Is it something that they will have to be on for the rest of their lives?
Most of the time, they do not. Most of the time, we can get things controlled. The first step is to get the symptoms controlled. The next step is to then keep them controlled and on the least amount of medicine we can use. And then after they do well for a period of time, be it 6 months, a year, 2 years, depending on the nature of their symptoms, the severity of their symptoms, and what other medical conditions they have, we can then work on a plan to try to reduce their symptoms. You know, many, many children do outgrow their asthma, and the studies have definitely shown that the medications that we use don't have any impact on that. You're either going to outgrow this disease or you're not. But the medications also have clearly shown that they make the road between here and there a whole lot better and keep the child a whole lot healthier, which translates to being in school, parents being at work, and kids growing and developing normally and participating in all the normal activities that children are supposed to be doing.
So, Lisa, there are a variety of reasons that some patients have difficulty with the control of their asthma, and non-adherence or not understanding medication. These are some of them. So speak about how you teach, and you mentioned earlier that you want to speak to the child if they're old enough to understand how to use those inhalers and to show the parents and have them all understand together. So speak about how you do that.
So when we see the patients for that initial visit and for follow-up visits, we educate at every single solitary visit. And our personal office is equipped with respiratory therapists and medical assistants who have each been trained to help us in that teaching. We talk about the use of a spacer. Spacers are absolutely necessary to make the delivery of that inhaled steroid, make it from the actual pump of the inhaler down into the airways. Many people think you can put an inhaler in a child's mouth and they're able to get the medicine down into the lung. What research shows us is if you put the inhaler in the child's mouth and puff it, the bulk of that medication hits the back of their throat and it's swallowed into the belly, where it is not absorbed and is not going to treat the inflammation of the airways. So as you're working through the education with the families, it can be a challenge because you do not always have the same parent coming to each visit. You may have a grandparent coming to the visit. There's definitely some cultural differences in terms of when a child should be responsible for their own medication. And we feel very broadly across all of the providers here that a child should not be responsible for their own medication at the earliest until maybe 16 years old, because they simply cannot remember to take these medications as they're directed. And obviously, if the medicine sits in that inhaler, it's not going to do any bit of good to help that child's disease. We also have some issues with the medications actually being picked up from the pharmacy. So again, you have to engage the family and realize this is a team approach to help them to understand why the use of this medication and the delivery of this medication is vital to their child's success. The expense of medications is another huge issue, and we're hopeful that with some of the changes going on in healthcare right now, that that can be improved, period. It's very frustrating when you have to put a child on a combination inhaled steroid long-acting bronchodilator, and these are the sickest of our asthmatics. And those particular inhalers are roughly $300+ a month. So you can imagine a child whose family has limited resources in regards to insurance, how are they able to afford that?
So speak about the school a little bit, Lisa, and what do you want parents to be telling the school? You mentioned exercise-induced asthma, which is a different type of asthma, but what do you tell the parents about dealing with the school and attending gym and recess and what you want the school to be on the lookout for?
Our goals when we're treating asthma, like what Dr. Field said, is that these children are able to do as much as any other child can. Now, we do have bronchodilators, that's albuterol, Xopenex, inhalers that we want at the schools. The state has paperwork available to each of the school districts so that the nurse is able to administer those medications. We would love for our families to have that paperwork filled out before the start of school each year, and that's another piece that we educate on routinely. We do have arrangements with the Greenville County School District, which is the largest district in our state, in terms of any notes that come from our office are automatically accepted. They do not have to have additional paperwork. They can just take the notes that come from our office. But the key with the schools is realizing that there's other environmental triggers while they're there. You have children that wear large doses of perfume, large deodorant sprays, just large amounts of spray being administered while they're in the gym locker rooms and when they're in the hallways. Unfortunately, we do have smoking on some of the school campuses. And even some of the teachers that try to limit some of the bacterial things going on in their rooms are spraying Lysol and, you know, various antibacterial sprays. Any type of strong-smelling aerosol, that too can trigger our patients. So it is really a bit of a challenge to help them get the best environment when they're at school. That being said, we have lots of help from Greenville County School District and the surrounding districts. The school nurses come through a program that I teach every couple of years, so everybody is kind of on the same page in regards of what we need to be happening at the schools, that we don't want the plug-in deodorizers, we don't want the essential oil atomizers, any type of strong odors in the classrooms, again, to lessen the triggers and then lessen those flares that the kids experience when they're exposed to them.
I would just want to add also to that the schools can be an extension of the parents in terms of identifying symptoms and recognizing when a child might be starting to get actually acutely ill or even just when their symptoms are not as well controlled as they usually are. And the sooner it's recognized that there's a problem developing, the better off everybody is.
So, Dr. Fields, I'd like you to wrap it up for us in summary. Please tell the listeners what you'd like them to know about asthma in children, about your team approach and multidisciplinary approach to dealing with the families and the children with asthma, including some of those triggers that we've mentioned and even air quality, and just what you want the listeners to know about your team and asthma in children.
I think the most important thing for people to realize is that asthma is not something they need to be afraid of. It is a very serious disease. It can cause tremendous problems, and it does unfortunately cause deaths. But the reality is that with good therapy and working together as a good team, we can control the vast majority of our patients and keep them out there functioning, doing everything like everybody else. what I'd want people to realize is that if they're having symptoms, they're having difficulties, they shouldn't accept those symptoms. They should be searching for more help, and that's what we're here to provide. We believe very strongly that we should be able to control the symptoms to really, really maximize everybody's quality of life, and that extends not just from the child, but to the whole family, because certainly everybody in the home is affected when there's somebody who's frequently sick.
I'd like to add to what Dr. Field said. In terms of how we want our families and our children to be able to be cared for, there are lots of resources in our local community that we lean on and that they can lean on to get the help they need. We've got Family Connections, which has the Breathe Easy program that will go into the homes and do an actual home assessment to look for triggers and to try to address any problems that they may see. And Family Connections will report directly back to our office or the pediatrician's office to let them know what are some of the areas that this family needs to work on. We also have the Bradshaw Institute, which has facilitated school-based health programs, and this has been a tremendous support to me. I follow quite a few of the Medicaid population patients, and I am able to contact the nurse practitioner in some of the schools. She can actually do assessments on the children while they're at school. So if I have seen them for an exacerbation and I'm concerned that that child is not improving, Holly can assess them in their school environment and then relay back to me whether the child's improving or whether we need to do further management to get that child back to health. There's multiple referrals that are available for the medical legal partnership. So as I was saying earlier about the cost of medications, the medical legal partnership can help people in terms of insurance, housing if there's a problem with mold and things of that nature. And then we, of course, have lots of case management within our own practice and within the practices of GHS. And lastly, we have Camp Love Along, which is a program that is run by our respiratory therapy department. And this is done during the summer, and while the kids attend, not only are they having a really good time and getting to know other kids that are like them, but they're also learning how to take care of themselves. So again, more education. And that, I think, is one of the biggest parts of asthma care. You just cannot get enough education.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today. It's really great information. You're listening to Inside Health with Greenville Health System. For more information on asthma in children, please visit ghs.org. That's ghs.org. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.